Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, it's Thursday the 25th of April. I'm Alex von Tunzelman and I'm a nun on the run. Welcome back to Paper Cuts, the modern newspaper review. Every day we assemble the Fourth Estate and lead them in a rousing community choir that echoes through all of Fleet Street. The Sun's singing from the wrong hymn sheet, the Telegraph's bass has a lot of power but could work on the tone, and the Daily Star is squawking like a psycho scumbag seagull, but we love them anyway. You can help us keep going by spreading the word about Paper Cuts. Send three of your best buddies a text, WhatsApp or email linking them to papercutsshow.co.uk. There's a link you can copy in the show notes. Every person who listens and subscribes helps us keep going so we can bring you the best bits of the papers every weekday. Now, here are the top stories for today's show. Start a love train, a love train. Labour's gonna renationalise the railways. Choo-choo, woo-woo. Wild horses couldn't drag me away. A couple of horses get spooked and rampage around London. Apocalypse possibly imminent. And you and I are gonna live forever. John Cleese spends 17 grand a year on stem cell therapy to keep him in the dewy flush of youth. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we're singing with one voice and unfortunately it's out of tune. I'm Alex von Tunzelman and with me today is journalist and author John Ellidge. John, congratulations are in order because you've got a book out today.
I do. It's finally officially out rather than just sort of randomly on shelves for some inadequately explained reason. But your copy of A History of the World in 47 Borders, which you've obviously already ordered, is on its way to you now.
Was the party nice last night?
I have such a headache.
He's going to live it. I'll stop
I'm
shouting.
I'm going to be so great on this show today.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. And yes, available in all good bookshops. It's A History of the World in 47 Borders by John Ellidge. And also joining me is comedian and host of a new podcast, How Was It For You, Marcus Brigstocke.
Good morning.
Marcus, how was it for you?
Well, it was excellent. I've had a hell of a time. I was going to get the tube here, and I was able at the very last minute to get on a horse that was passing and able to ride here against my will and at very high speed. So it was tremendous.
You weren't even meant to be on the show today.
No, exactly. I accidentally fell on a passing horse and here I am.
Okay, John, run through the broadsheet front pages for us this morning.
Okay, The Guardian is leading with Labour pledges to nationalise rail network within 5 years. Below that, a less cheery story. The era of peace in Europe is over, Kiev warns West. Next to a picture of some horses that have bolted, which
yes.
is quite appropriate. The Eye has... What is going on with The Eye?
No one knows.
Revealed Labour's plan to nationalise UK rail. Well, of course it's revealed. They've put out a press statement. That's what everyone's got this story. Why are they trying to make it sound sinister? The Daily Telegraph is going a different way with its Labour coverage, fair to say. Starmer refuses to match PM's defence budget.
Yet.
Well, yeah.
And apparently child drinkers rise in generation lockdown.
Well, who can blame them?
There wasn't much else to do.
No.
And that also leads the Times. England worst in world for underage drinking.
Surely England best in world for underage drinking.
I was going to say, I misread that when it said worst in world for underage drinking. I thought we were lagging behind and that more youngsters
need
should
to
be encouraged to drink.
Probably not, but yes. And Marcus, what are the tabloids up to?
Well, actually, the cover of the Mail says, do you, in capital letters, have a problem with drink? Take our quiz before you answer no. And if you're too pissed to read the quiz, the answer is yes.
If you're a child,
yeah,
oh God.
Exactly. They've got a photo of two of the horses that were spooked yesterday, and they blame it squarely on the builders who dropped some concrete that terrified the horses. They builders sparked 6-mile rampage of terrified cavalry horses.
Bloody builders.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And they said they were going to spook the horses much earlier than they actually did. The Sun Beatrice X in drug death. First love found in Miami hotel. This is Princess Beatrice's first boyfriend, has apparently died of a suspected drug overdose.
High level of news avoidance from
yes,
your son, as usual.
Absolutely.
I'm very sorry to hear about the story, though.
Yeah, yeah. And the Daily Star, proud to love animals. So proud, in fact, they haven't run with the runaway horses story. they have got, I do like this, Britain's hardest seagull is a wuss. It's amazing. So-called tough nut exposed as a fraud.
We've had a seagull story every day this week, I think. Oh, it's wonderful. They're going full on.
Well, with people, with the weather being so beautifully warm, people are heading for the beaches. But the main headline in the Star is greasy fry-ups will turn us into zombies. Eating highly processed food like fry-ups is creating a nation of insomniac zombies. But on the plus side, they taste really, really good.
How are they for hangovers?
I think it'll turn you away from being a zombie and back into a human.
Yeah, I think they're good. I think they're comforting. And I think, John, that's what you've earned today.
Now, finally, a bit of news which might cheer us all up. Labour has said it's going to do something if and when it gets into government. And the thing it's going to do is renationalise the railways. John, as Papercut's railway correspondent, what's the plan?
My first question is, why did they have to do this today? Of all days, I want a nice quiet day. Why do I have to deal with news? Okay, so they're promising that this, Louise Hay, the shadow transport secretary, has described it as the biggest reform of our railways in a generation, which I think that's probably half true. They're very carefully not calling it nationalisation, but that sort of is what it is. They're not going to actually take contracts off anyone. They're just going to let them expire and move them gradually in-house. Basically, they're going to sort of, instead of having like lots of different railway operators who all have, who duplicate kind of back office staff, and there's like costs added through like the bidding process and the contracts and so on, they're just going to gradually merge them into like one state-owned operator. And this is meant to save about £2.2 billion a year. Whether that works or not, I don't know, but that's the plan. The other element of this is they're going to create a thing called the Passenger Standards Authority, which will scrutinise the new system. It will make sure that passengers are getting the best price on their tickets rather than the worst one. There'll be automatic delay repay and things like digital season tickets across the network. I mean, there is some radicalism here, but also it's not a million miles away from what's sort of been happening anyway since the pandemic. It's just kind of committing to it a bit more. Like the old privatised system of franchising is basically dead because there wasn't enough money in it for the operators and they keep going bust and the government keeps taking them in-house. And Labour have just said, no, we like that. We think it's good.
Yeah. Mm.
As a process, that thing of them going bust and then getting bailed out so that shareholders continually get paid and all the rest of it is demonstrably crap. I mean, I tour all around the country all the time to get to gigs and back, and it blows my mind that it's not huge, it's a hybrid, but still my pretty chunky car, including insurance, with me on my own in it, is cheaper than sharing a means of getting there. That is absolutely insane.
I wouldn't get too excited because, like, a reason the railways are crap is we don't have the capacity on the network. So you either need to build, like, the point of HS2 was never a high-speed line. They just pretended it was because that sounds cooler. The point was that by building another north-south line and sticking the express trains on it, you can kind of clear space for the local network. You can run more local trains.
Yeah.
You can add to the capacity of the network. That is the barrier. It's actually like you're kind of tinkering with different contractual structures and stuff. If you really want kind of like, cheaper fares, emptier trains, more reliable service, you need to invest in the infrastructure. There is nothing here about that. £2 billion is like, if I earned that from my book, I'd be quite happy with that. In all honesty.
But well, now you've mentioned it on paper.
Sure, I'm sure. But in terms of like, public spending, that's not a huge amount. It's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not transformative.
At this stage, you do need
to invest in the network.
I'll take something.
Yeah.
I mean, the automatic refund thing is absolutely crucial, not only for passengers who are delayed and should just get their refunds anyway, but because the real scandal of this is when a train is delayed, the rail operator is able to claim for the delay if the fault is on the track, which most of the time it is. They can claim for every single passenger that's on the train, whereas most of the passengers on the train go, I don't know how much I can be asked to fill out paperwork that might not actually work. So the automatic refund thing is fantastic, not least because it serves in me a sense of justice that some fuckers are not going to get my fucking money when it's me who's been fucking delayed.
I'm starting to feel like you just don't care about shareholders.
And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him. But I'm sure that's nothing to worry about. People in central London were in for a surprise yesterday as five horses from the Household Cavalry threw their riders and bolted from Hyde Park Barracks. Marcus, what happened here?
Well, I tell you what happened here is I lost 40 quid. I had an each way bet on the grey one, making it to Whitechapel by lunchtime. And sadly, after a cracking opening, it fell away. No, I mean, look, we should say a cyclist and a pedestrian were both hurt. No lives have been lost, and I think they're okay. And one of the horses collided with a bus. And so some of the photographs are upsetting. The white horse has got a lot, even by horse standards, a lot of blood on it. Put it like this, had this been part of the Grand National, there'd have been a blue mystery curtain circled round that horse and then something magical would have happened to it.
Well, and it went to live on a farm.
I was so upset when I learnt that the white horse was covered in its own blood. That really upset me.
And then, whose blood did you want it to be, John?
Well, this is the big question. Like, what did I think had happened that was less upsetting? Why did it not bother me when I thought it was, say, human blood? What is wrong with me?
Did the horses break free from a ketchup factory? Because if it's that, then it's fine.
Yummy!
But what actually happened here, the way this happened, was that the Household Cavalry were practicing in Hyde Park. They all get to have a turn sitting on a horse. And some building contractors were doing what they do, and they dropped a big lump of concrete into the back of a truck. The truck being metal, the concrete being concrete, it made a hell of a din. Mm. And these military horses, who are military horses and trained for exciting moments, went, "We're not having this!" and absolutely legged it.
It's a good horse voice. I like
Thank
it,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume that's what horses sound like.
Pretty much.
And they then ran through London. They ran for 6 miles.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean,
so, look, these are big, very powerful horses. I would not have attempted to stop them.
I'd have
let them run it out till they were done. I think the really big waste here is that this didn't happen at the weekend when, of course, it was the marathon. Can you imagine being in the closing stages of the marathon and being overtaken by 6 horses?
I mean, that's cheating. I mean, they definitely would have won.
Yeah, exactly. I do think, though, when I first saw this, and it did look so much like the apocalypse, I thought only in 2024 Britain would the arrival of the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse see the horsemen fall off.
So the other thing about this story that I was genuinely quite impressed by is the horses were in Belgrave Square at 8:27 a.m. Mm. They were in Limehouse at 8:40. How do you get across town in 13 minutes?
Uber.
Why are we all still relying on, like, you know, the tube and Uber when we've got horses?
I mean, really? Well, I think if you had lots of horses, there might be a traffic issue.
Yeah, that's true. Horse congestion would be a problem.
Yeah.
But they can move. That's pretty nippy.
Oh, they're very fast.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. It's like the Elizabeth line. Now on Paper Cuts, you know we love them. They're the grit in our oyster, the cherry on our cake, the bun in our oven. It's the headlines of the day. What have you got for us, John?
I have a story in the Sun that's already making me angry. Oh, crikey. Fans of sedate 1980s sitcom Terry and June have hit out after TV bosses added trigger warnings. Online viewers are told they must prepare for, quote, discriminatory language of the period. Now, firstly, have you ever met a fan of sedate 80s sitcom Terry and June? It doesn't feel, it's not Only Fools and Horses, it's not Citizen Smith, it doesn't feel like it's one of those things that's massively endured. Who are these people who are getting angry about? Anyway, the headline is Terry and Loons. So
well,
there you go.
Right. You're not going to be invited to Terry and June Com, where thousands of us gather and cosplay as either Terry or June.
I've never seen Terry and June. What
Nobody
happens?
Nobody has. Right, also in the Sun, this is more like it. Dust turns the skies red and settles on the Temple of Apollo as a Saharan sandstorm sweeps across Greece. This is obviously one of those, they've just run it because of the picture opportunity, but it is a fantastic picture. And the headline is Acropolis Now.
Oh, I mean, that is good,
yeah,
though.
That's
yeah,
great.
That is good,
yeah,
well, though. Good,
fair play to the Sun there. And finally from me, a vintage Ford Escort draped with a giant doily is among the unusual entrants for this year's Turner Prize. Apparently the work by Jasleen Cower, 37, is in her exhibit aimed at showing her early life in Glasgow Sikh community. Again, it's a lovely picture. And the headline is Doyle Change.
And Marcus, how about you?
I've got some crackers in the Daily Star. Now, brace yourselves, because this first one is relatively complicated. What you need to picture is a police lineup, but instead of people, it's seagulls. And what they're doing is they're comparing the different hardness and potential criminality of different seagulls.
Are these real seagulls? Are these actual seagulls?
Yes, yes. There's one called Bugsy, one called Judas, and one called the Boss. And they're standing in a photograph that is a police lineup, and the headline is, if you got the image in your head, the headline is, The Usual Suspects.
Hey!
You know, like, once you've got the, then it's fine. It's good.
All right. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the names of the seagulls alone are worth the price.
Yeah, Bugsy, Judas and the Boss. Amazing. Amazing. Apparently, it's trendy to dress like Columbo.
Right.
So the trench coat is back in fashion. They've gone with dress like Columbo rather than like a flasher in the 70s or Inspector Clouseau or indeed Gadget. And it's not really a pun, this, but it is very nice if you remember Columbo. They've got a picture of Peter Falk and it says, just one more thing, buy a trench coat.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now?, the politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fern, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to the middle bits of the papers where the really scary stuff lurks. And today we have yet more on the ongoing trend of rich people wanting to live forever. It's not that weird vampire dad billionaire again, though.
Oh, thank God.
I know, he's so creepy. This time it's John Cleese. He's been talking to Saga magazine.
He's not creepy at all.
No, he's fine. He's been talking to Saga magazine and says that despite being, in his words, surprisingly poor, he's spending £17,000 a year on rejuvenating stem cell treatments. Maybe that's why he's poor. John, is it working?
There's a full quote. I'm going to read the end of the quote first. He says, I think that's why I don't look bad for 84. I'm not sure that's true. I think he looks fine for 84.
Yeah.
I don't think 84 is what it was 30 years ago. I think there's a lot of quite spry people in their mid-80s out there.
30 years ago, it was 54.
Exactly.
Quick maths.
Hang on, I'm just checking that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But okay, so he's spending £17,000 every 12 to 18 months. For 20 years he's been doing this as
well. Oh my goodness.
So like, if he's been doing this for 20 years, you would be hoping for more of an effect. Yes, he's having these stem cells injected. He says these cells travel around the body and when they discover a place that needs repair, they'll then change into the cells that you want for that repair. So they might become cartilage cells or liver cells. So I think that's why I don't look bad for 84. Now, I am not a scientist, but I am suspicious. I just don't think that's a thing that keeps, that helps. I'm suspicious that this is science.
Right.
It doesn't sound convincing to me. I think what has happened here is that someone has found quite a clever way of separating John Cleese from £17,000 a year for two decades.
I mean, I'm looking at you,
without marrying him.
John, I was going to say, if somebody offered you a nice warm mug of stem cells right now, you look like a man who might take it.
They'd have to be deep fried.
good.
And Marcus, there is more on this. I mean, John Cleese looks like he's positively economising next to this feature in the Eye paper about longevity clubs. What's going on here? What's this?
Well, there's a very heartening headline in the Eye that just says, forget the gym. And I thought, oh, good, I'm on trend. But sadly, they say more than that. So they've gone inside the longevity clubs that cost £60,000 per year. These are sort of old people's homes, but wellness clinics somewhere. I don't know how much sort of wellness is one of those words that gets used. People don't know the difference between health and wellness. Health and wellness are sort of the same thing, except wellness is sold to you by a liar. in a sense, these are quite good because instead of just trying to live for longer, people are finally addressing the idea of living well. If you're going to stay alive for a long time, it's no good just being a sort of decrepit, dusty ghost. This is odd. So if you go into one of these places, which I have to say, I've already counted myself out based on what it's called. This clinic that they're talking about here is called Seren. Welcome. What? To Seren.
Oh my God, that's definitely somewhere in a sci-fi movie that's going to murder you.
Surrenne. So it's not serene, it's Seren.
Oh God.
Welcome.
These people are going to end up Seren. As food.
Definitely.
There's microbiome analysis, there's DNA methylation and dissection of clients' libido, fitness and nutrition, all of which help to map out the rate at which they're aging. I'm going to say, you don't need that. You're aging anyway, and you can sort of...
You're aging at the rate of one day a day. That's how it works.
Exactly. Are you all right today? Not really. What hurts? Well, both my knees, part of my back, and all my fingers. Oh, okay. Well, you're a bit older than you were. Bye!
And how much of your hard-earned cash are they relieving you of?
Well, this one is £60,000 a year. They've got a thing here which I was fascinated by. You can lose weight through ultra-fasting. But the thing about fasting is it involves not eating anything, so it isn't possible to ultra-fast, or so I thought. Ultra-fasting, as I understand here, is when fasting is combined with colonics.
Oh my God.
Colonic irrigation.
So negative eating.
So it is, you're putting nothing in one end and removing as much as you can from the other.
Just hollowing yourself out, so you're just like a tube.
I have been for a colonic rinse.
Well.
And I went with...
You are looking perky this morning.
I'm not in the frame of mind for this. Well, let me tell you what happened. I went with my dear friend, Phil Jupitus. The two of us went.
Don't throw Phil Jupitus into this story.
And poor John.
What happened was that just before the... So our clinician, our therapist, had one of those lovely, slightly silvery S sounds who just said things like, we're just going to rinse your colon like this. And she said to Phil, okay, Phil, so I'm just in a moment just about to insert the tube. But I do just need to ask you, Phil, did you eat something quite spicy last night? And Phil said, yeah, I did. Yeah, I had curry. Actually, I had a madras. And she went, you might want to think about having something slightly less spicy. You have got some light scalding around the anus. Putting the tube in now.
Why do so many of my appearances on this show these days involve things going up bums?
Well,
all the news it's fit to print. And that's the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thanks to John Ellidge.
Thank you.
Thanks to Marcus Brigstock.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget the Papercut Supporters Club. Ditch those ads, get more fun from just £3.60 a month. Head over to papercutsshow.co.uk or follow the link in the show notes. We'd just like to thank some of our lovely supporters for helping to make the show today.
You can dance, you can jive, Alexandra Boyle.
Having the time of your life, Martin Sushko.
See that girl, watch that scene, digging the dancing queen, Anne Truick. I've been Alex von Tunzelman and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when boffins report that Antarctica's Mount Erebus is shooting out £5,000 worth of gold and diamond dust every day. I'm just off to see if Ryanair flies to the Scott Amundsen South Pole station. Does a dog sled and a pack of huskies count as excess baggage? See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Alex von Tunzelman, with John Ellidge and Marcus Brigstock. The producer was Liam Tate. Assistant producer was Adam Wright. And the audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams. Socials by Kieran Leslie. Design by Jim Parrott, with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh. Managing editor is Jacob Jarvis. And group editor is Andrew Harrison. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.